You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Being a Wednesday, it is time for World of Work. And as I said, many of you might have been called insubordinate in your workplace and you are worried about what that means in law. Share your stories with us, ask your questions, and let's see whether we can help you get a proper grip from the point of view of labor law on what insubordination actually means in law. Okay, so for the next 25 minutes or so, we'll take your calls on 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Joining me in the studio is Melanie Hart, who's an expert in this particular area at Fasken Martineau, partner, labor, employment, and human rights as well. Melanie, it's lovely seeing you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Eusebius. Thanks for the invite.
I think this is such an important issue because in the workplace, there is such a differential distribution of power between employers, employees, between managers and those who are lower down in the organogram, that it's very difficult to know where genuine insubordination ends and sheer bullying on the part of those that may have power and authority over us actually begins. And we need to understand the difference. So let's just cut straight to the chase. What is insubordination in law?
So let's start off with the idea that as an employee, you have a duty to be subordinate towards your employer. So you have a duty to obey your employer who is in a position of authority over you. Mm. And of course, on the flip side of that is as the employer, you are entitled to issue reasonable, lawful instructions to your employees. So insubordination in a nutshell is defined as the refusal to obey a reasonable and lawful instruction from your employer. And I use the terms reasonable and lawful purposely because there's certain instances where a refusal to comply with an instruction may not necessarily be insubordinate if that instruction was not lawful or not reasonable. Mm. Contrasted with being insolent, there's a common misunderstanding between what is insubordination versus what is insolence. Insolence, on the other hand, is being cheeky, disrespectful, undermining your employer's authority. But employers often conflate the two and muddle up the two concepts.
Okay. And insolence is not a legal concept. It may just be a horrible relationship.
Well, it is a disciplinary offense for which the employer can take disciplinary action against you. And this is where they often muddle up the terms where an employee has been insubordinate, so not complied with an instruction, or vice versa, they tend to charge the incorrect disciplinary charge.
Okay, and I want to pause over this because it's an important starting point. Part of the world of work means that you can lawfully and reasonably be instructed to do some things. It just comes with the territory.
Correct.
Yeah. Obviously, the million-dollar question is, how does one define reasonableness? I have often haggled over certain kinds of wording in contracts with clients that I have. And in the end, you cross your fingers and you hope that there will be goodwill between you and the other party that you have a contract with, that you're both going to be just, quote-unquote, sensible and, pardon the pun, reasonable in when conflict arises, trying to puzzle through whether the dispute that has arisen, whether or not on the facts you were reasonably refusing an instruction or whether it was unreasonable. But does the law, does case law, does your experience in practice help us to understand how we determine what reasonable is?
So let's start off from the basis that a job description cannot be comprehensive. So there are certain tasks that are ancillary to your duties and responsibilities that cannot necessarily be defined. So if you're asked to do something that falls within the reasonable ambit of your job function, I think it is reasonable for the employer to ask you to do that. And maybe that's a good starting point, is sometimes don't necessarily just instruct off the bat to avoid a conflict situation. First ask and then perhaps instruct, as opposed to instructing first, and then it tends to escalate into conflict. So that might be...
No, I understand that, right, yeah. And that obviously is, I mean, that speaks to a very important prior part of this. At the point at which we bring in Melanie, it has become adversarial.
Yes.
But hopefully you have an organizational culture where you don't just have exclamation marks coming out of people's mouths, but actual negotiation of, you know, I'd like to see you at 3 o'clock on Friday. Can you make the meeting? No, I'm not coming. I'm taking my kids to school. You're being insubordinate or you're being insolent.
Yes.
Hopefully, because there's a question here. There's always, isn't there, a non-legal question here about the culture, the relationship, how healthy it is. By the time we talk law, it means that something has already gone awry in the culture.
Yes, the relationship has soured to such an extent that, you know, now you're contemplating disciplinary action, or it's very adversarial. But a good example, so let me perhaps start off with examples of what would be a reasonable instruction and what would be a lawful instruction, or the converse. So a reasonable instruction would be, instead of operating one machine, we need you to operate two in order to expedite the delivery of a particular product to our customers.
Mm-hmm.
So you are not necessarily in your job description defined to operate one machine only. That would be a reasonable instruction. The flip side of that would be an unreasonable instruction would be asking your Muslim chef to carve a piece of pork.
Mm-hmm.
That he would be able to refuse that. It wouldn't be insubordinate because it's not a reasonable instruction. An unlawful instruction is, of course, let's bypass the safety valve in order to expedite things. The employee has a right to refuse to abide by that unlawful instruction, and that would not constitute insubordination.
I love the gray areas, and we'll take some calls in a second. If you have a question about insubordination, maybe this is an experience you've had. How have you handled it in the world of work? From both sides, by the way, as HR, as managers, and of course, if you think you are currently being told and through a DC process that you've been insubordinate, but you actually don't think that is the case, then Melanie will do her best to help you out. Give us a call on 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. The easiest examples for me are always the ones that I can speak to most authoritatively. So I turned on the telly the other day and I see a colleague of mine in the media who is a newsreader, and I want to be sketchy with the example because I quite like this person, but I felt sorry for them. Basically selling she's voicing a product that is being sold on the same platform where she is an authoritative newsreader. And I'm thinking to myself, Nierman, I take you seriously when you interview Patricia. 5 minutes later, you're now telling me, take Stilnox, for example, if you have anxiety or whatever the case might be. One possibility is that that person just straightforwardly agreed. Maybe they got extra bucks. But hypothetically, and I don't know the facts, let's say that person's boss comes to them and says, listen, your contract says that from time to time, we can reasonably ask you to do things that is consistent with the broader objectives of the company. Look at 5-1-3 year on your contract. And one of the things that we want to do is to make your voice available to some of our advertisers. And some of them have been asking because they like your voice. So we need you to be in the studio at 3:20 on Thursday to put your voice to this particular commercial we're running for a client. If that person refuses, what area are we entering there?
Well,
I can imagine the boss saying, in some worlds, some bosses will say, Melanie, you're being insubordinate now.
Well, I think it largely depends on how the contract is worded. So if the contract says, well, this is your job description, but coupled with that is you should do anything else that is reasonably within the ambit of that, I think that refusal would be insubordinate.
Wow, that's interesting. That's interesting. Shall we take a break there, Abel? Oh, not yet. Okay, I can see that. That's that face. We've got lots of calls. I don't mind. Tumelo, thank you for calling in today. Just put on your headphones for me, Melanie, so that you can hear Tumelo nice and clearly. Tumelo, you can speak directly to Melanie. Go ahead.
Hello, Melanie. How are you?
Hi, Tumelo. Well, and yourself?
I'm good. Melanie, I have a case on Tuesday. I'm the respondent in that case.
Yes.
So I charged and subsequently dismissed this employee for crossing subordination in that he refused to, he's a storeman, so he was given a pick slip to pick stock. So he refused. And now his reason for refusing was that he has an he has a pending grievance. And now this grievance, it has nothing to do with this, with his job description. This grievance is relating to a new policy that was implemented relating to using of cell phones during working hours. So now, for 2 days, he was given instructions by his supervisor, please go and pick. He refused. For the whole day now, he was just sitting, doing nothing. And also for the second day, he was, you know, he refused the instruction, and now we decided to dismiss this employee, bearing in mind that he had also a written warning and a final written warning for this. So now I just wanted to find out, does he have a leg to stand on by this defense that, you know, we didn't deal with his grievance?
To Mello, there's actually case law which indicates that if an employee has a pending grievance, they cannot refuse to comply with lawful and reasonable instructions in order to achieve the objective of resolving their grievance.
Yeah.
So I think given that he's on a final written warning and you've followed the principle of progressive discipline, I think you should be okay with your CCMA matter, and it's likely that your dismissal would be found to be fair because his refusal to comply with that in the face of his grievance is not a reasonable refusal.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks,
Tamello. Thank you, Tamello. Much appreciated. Andrea, good morning.
Hello. Hi.
Hi, welcome to the show. Chat to Melanie.
Hi.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Melanie. Quick question. I employ a caregiver to take care of somebody. She has a contract and her hours of work are stated in her contract, and she regularly arrives late for work, and I have discovered also sometimes leaves early.
Mm-hmm.
How do I handle this? What do I do? Because it's very difficult to get into a negative situation when you're relying on somebody to take care of another vulnerable human being, because I'm very worried that when I'm not there, she's going to take it out on this old lady.
Absolutely. So, Andrea, what you're dealing with there is not insubordination, but rather a different form of misconduct. Given that her contract of employment clearly stipulates her hours of work, you would be able to institute disciplinary action against her by charging her with failure to comply with her working hours, her agreed working hours. And what you would do is start off with issuing her with a verbal warning. Should she repeat the offense, you would then escalate to a written warning followed by a final written warning. So that's slightly different to what we're dealing with today, but it certainly is misconduct which warrants disciplinary action, because you're entitled to stipulate those working hours for your employee.
Okay, all right, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye. I appreciate it. Thank you, Andrea. 19 minutes after 11. Ntlantla, Buli, and Shady, we're going to come to your questions on the other side of this.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
22 minutes after 11, we've got Melanie Hart here from Fasken, a partner and a specialist in labor, employment and human rights. And what an important topic. The lines are going crazy. Clearly, many of you have been insubordinate, ne? Now you are hoping that Melanie can help you out. Or, this being South Africa, you threw your weight around with your power. Now you are scared going to the CCMA. But I'm loving your calls. Very instructive. I'm certainly learning a lot. Thank you for being here today, Melanie. Let's go to Soweto. Nhlanhla, welcome to the show. Speak directly to Melanie.
Thank you. My working hours are from 2 p.m. to 7 in the evening, 7 p.m.
Yes.
And I'm due for a disciplinary hearing. And the employer wants me to come for the DC at 9 in the morning. And I've refused, especially because I have another part-time job in the morning. And now I just want to know if my refusal is that insubordination, or is it correct for the employer to demand that I come at 9 in the morning when my working hours are from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m.? It's outside my working hours in the morning at 9.
Yeah. So it's certainly not insubordination in that you're already undergoing a disciplinary action for separate charges. Have we lost Ntlantla?
I'm sure he is, as we say, listening on the radio.
Oh, good. Oh, good. So, Nhlanhla, so you're certainly facing disciplinary action again for separate charges. I think it's a matter of asking your employer if they could possibly reconvene the hearing for during your working hours. That's what I would suggest that you do.
Okay. Booley, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Go ahead.
Hi, Booley.
Hi. Hi, good morning, Eusebius. Good morning, Melanie. I just want to find out, in the context of a government department, what really constitutes insubordination? Now, normally I take instructions from my supervisor. Now, what happens in instances where I've got a minister who bypasses my supervisor and then gives me instructions directly to me? Am I obliged to take instructions directly from my supervisor's supervisor without first letting my direct supervisor to know? And I'm just giving that example that in such instances where I've got my supervisor giving instructions directly to me, am I within my right to say I cannot take these instructions unless they come from my direct supervisor? Thank you.
No, so Booley, I would say, if the manager higher up in the organization than your supervisor gives you an instruction, that's clearly within his managerial authority. So I would certainly say if you ignore those or refuse to obey those, you do so at your own peril.
No, I'm not really talking about my supervisor. Normally I take instructions from my supervisor, but now say if the culture has become in such a way that the relationship between my supervisor and my supervisor's supervisor has deteriorated, and then my supervisor's supervisor gives the instructions directly to me by passing the person to whom I'm lawfully obliged to take instructions from.
So I would say forget about the relationship between the respective supervisors. So, I mean, that's presumably why the supervisor's supervisor is bypassing your immediate supervisor. But provided the nature of the instruction is lawful and reasonable, you have to abide thereby, even though it hasn't come from your direct supervisor.
Okay.
That's keys.
Okay, ciao. Bye.
Bye, Bully.
Shame, man. Sometimes the right answer isn't the right answer.
I hear that a lot. Often clients don't want to get the correct answer, and they try and shop around for someone that would give them a different answer.
You wouldn't last in the state attorney's office. You know, politicians only want lawyers to tell them what they want to hear.
Oh, we get that a lot. We get that a lot.
Shady, I hope you're not shady. Go ahead and speak to Melanie.
No, not at all. Hi, Melanie.
Hi, Shady.
So I've got a bit of a problem at work. So there was a post. I'm a nurse, right?
Yes.
So there was a post that was advertised, and there was only two people who applied. It was me and a personal assistant. So yesterday, unfortunately, the day before, I got the regret letter that I wasn't chosen. They took the PA. So does it make sense? Maybe you can help me. Does it make sense that a PA, somebody who's been answering a call for the past 20 years, can actually manage nurses? I'm actually thinking of going to HR and just putting it in a way they could understand that you cannot have, or maybe I'm wrong, you cannot have somebody who does not know anything about nursing leading nurses. Does it make sense what I'm saying? Because now the problem is she's been there for 20 years. I've been there for a year at the company that I'm working for. She's been there for 20 years. I've been here for a year. So the thing is that she's got more business experience than I do, obviously, because I'm from the hospitals and stuff like that. But what I want to know is that now who's going to listen to who? Because now she's in charge of nurses, and she's been there. So who listens to who? The nurse listens to the PA? Or does, I don't know. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Shady, so look, what I would suggest as a starting point is have a look at the advertised job spec. And you're quite within your rights to go to HR to say you would like reasons given why she was appointed over and above yourself, particularly with reference to the job spec, and indicate that in your mind you are the better qualified person with reference to the job spec. So you can certainly call for reasons why you were not successfully appointed. And I think that that's what you should do as a first course of action.
Okay, we've got a final call we can take for today. Melanie, let's go to the Val. Zama, good morning and welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
I'm calling the show, so I'm quite excited. What happened is I applied for leave 4 months in advance at work. I was planning to go away, you know, and I was told, no, they're going to look at it. And I approached them again just close to the time that my leave is still hanging on the system. It was not approved. And nobody could answer me why they're not approving my leave. So I went away. When I came back, I get a written warning saying that I never applied for leave. But on the system, I've provided proof I applied for leave. The only problem is it was never approved on the system. So now I want to lay a grievance against that, because you can't give me a written warning. Because for me, I find that they could have said I've taken leave without approval. But the written warning is not written that. It's written leave not put on the system. Do you understand? The wording that they used, for me, it was wrong, because I've provided evidence that I did apply for leave. But it's just way long in advance. So for me to get a written warning regarding that, for me, I find that it's really unfair. So I want to take them up on that.
Zama, can I ask an irritating question? You don't want me as your BFF. Why didn't you ask them to approve the leave before going?
I work at a university, and they kept on running around. No, there's a new person coming in, but it's the same person. Do you understand? And then there were strikes, and then after strikes, they said, no, we'll tell you what we need to do. And then I kept on constantly asking, when is my leave going to be approved, you know?
So then you did, and like then, that cat in that one meme where it goes like, walking out of the office like the day before my leave. You're like, Isuga, I'm just going to go and gog.
I did exactly that, because for me, and another thing is then, because what happens, we work with artists, and then they decide to hold an exam on that day, but I think it was done out of spite, you know, and then afterwards they say I didn't apply for leave. And I said that I did.
Okay, hold that thought for me right there, Zama. We're just going to deal with your case, and then we'll wrap it there for today. But before I get Melanie to respond, let's...
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
Okay, we're wrapping our conversation. We're focusing today on insubordination. Yeah, I feel for Zama, but it sounds to me, and you, the qualified lawyer, not me, on her own version, she's in a spot of trouble.
Yeah, Zama, I was going to say, I think, unfortunately, you probably got to take your written warning on the chin. And the why I say that is, it's within the employer's discretion to grant you leave, depending on what the operational requirements are at the time. So even you, though you had applied for leave, it hadn't been granted. So you took matters into your own hands and nonetheless went on leave. So forget about the wording on the charge. It may not be 100% correct, but at the end of the day, you did commit misconduct. So I think take it on the chin, accept the written warning. It could have perhaps been a little bit worse.
A final general comment based on your practical experience. What is your advice to both employees and employers to make your work one that is, unfortunately for you, not going to give you a lot of income, to reduce the likelihood of this ending up in an adversarial bun fight about whether insubordination had in fact happened or not?
You know what I sometimes suggest, and it probably goes broader than just insubordination, is when I advise employers, is I say that you've also got to treat your employees like you would like to be treated. And I think that that's good advice and sound advice, because sometimes they lose sight of that, is that if they were on the receiving end, how would they like to be treated?
That's a very good, very, very good bit of advice, absolutely. Melanie, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I hope we'll have you back again. An expert in labor, employment, and human rights, and a partner at Fasken. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks, Eusebius.